Welcome back to the Chasing Tone Podcast. I am, of course, Brian Wampler of Wampler Pedals, back with Blake from the Tone Mob, and today we talk about DSP effects and how that may actually just change the world, and what we can do to really, really grab that and do something very cool and unique with it, and a little bit about a perception on it as well. And we also talk about some Benson amps. We talk about a little bit of pizza, coffee, a smidgen of craft beer. And let's jump right into the episode right now. Actually, hey, before I jump into this, I may have actually pronounced Nunabur wrong. It might be New Neighbor. I actually forget. I know Brian. I just don't usually call him by his last name. And my big, huge, heartfelt apologies if I'm mispronouncing your name. I know what it's like whenever people call me Wampler, because it is Wampler, and it doesn't really hurt my feelings, but if it's New Neighbor, I'm sorry. So anyways, let's jump into it.
Oh boy, Mr. Wampler, we actually managed to only talk for 20 minutes before recording today.
That's true.
This isn't...
Yes.
This is a record. A record... for shortest amount of pre-podcast discussion that we've done in quite some time.
You know, we're really good at having like two-hour-long conversations and recording 25 minutes of it.
I know. Well, that's because we don't always want everything we say to be public record.
Well, and let's be honest. I mean, if we start talking like too much off topic, then you're going to get some hate mail, you know. People would be like, Blake, why do you keep talking about pizza, dude? I don't care about pizza. And then, you know... That's a wrong statement to begin with, right? Because pizza is
everyone
fantastic.
Cares about pizza.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. So, anyways, yes.
Yeah, I know. I mean, we do go off topic, but when we're not on the mic, there is no topic.
That's true.
So
that's true.
So, anyway, but you actually do have a really good topic today.
Yes,
I think very worthy of discussion and. I'll let you introduce that.
So this is a point brought up by Brian Nunabur, Nunabur Audio, maker of fine guitar pedals. This podcast.
Yeah, I'm looking at an Iconoclast right now.
Yeah, it's Iconoclast right is one of the things he uses. I have it's name of it slipping my mind. What's the real popular reverb he makes?
Immerse.
The Immerse. So I have the Immerse, which is equally, mm-hmm. which is pretty fantastic. But anyway, so Brian is, if those of you who don't know Brian Nunabur, he's, I wouldn't say he's a digital DSP engineer, but I would say that he's very gifted and talented at creating DSP, you know, with guitar pedals. So, mm-hmm. I think he is actually an engineer, you know, so.
Yeah, I don't know if he's I don't know his background, so I won't right. say, but he's known for making high quality digital effects
right.
and pedals. Yes.
Right. So basically he says, his whole premise is that when some people hear, you know, they play through a digital pedal, something that converts the entire audio to digital and then back to analog. And they say, ooh, yuck, this pedal sucks. And then, so now they kind of have a bias against it. And they think that all pedals that do this suck. And I think really what he's saying and what he's trying to say, and I'm super bullet pointing here. I would highly recommend reading the whole thread on Nunabur Audio Community Gear Group on Facebook if you like to do that sort of thing. But he says there's so many factors involved that people use digital in a derogatory sense to describe something they don't like, even though there may be other factors involved. Skip through here just a little bit. There's a bias against digital gear among many people who love to buy and purchase gear. And, mm-hmm. you know, he says public perception is shifting, but it's still pretty slow. And the thing is, and this is going to sound really weird coming from a guy who makes primarily a lot of analog dirt type pedals, right?
Right.
But, or at least we have in the past. But I completely agree with him, 110%. And the thing mm-hmm. is... And I don't want to give away too much of what we've been doing, but I can say that we have dove in headfirst into the DSP world for the past few years. And the things you can do with that is so, it's unbelievably fascinating. It's just, it blows my mind. Not only simple things like making a filter. So, for example, whenever you make a filter in analog, there's different ways to do it, but you're never going to get it super precise exactly.
Yeah, it's not going to be perfect.
Right. But in DSP, oh, my friend, it can be exactly what you want. Exactly. Mm-hmm. So you could do a lot more things with it. And that's just one small, tiny little area. The biggest problem, I think, that we're starting to overcome this, but it's really to get really good converters, to get a really good sound whenever your signal does get converted. That takes money in the form of, like, basically processing power and all the parts that make a good digital pedal.
Yeah. I mean, I wonder if people even know about that side of it. When you have a digital effect, I mean, some of it gets, they all work in different ways. I don't want to oversimplify, but they do get converted to a digital signal and then back out to analog so you can actually hear it.
There's two different ways, primarily. One is converting the entire signal to digital and then converting it all back to analog. The other one is, for example, we do this on the ethereal. We take the signal, we make a copy of that signal, but we don't we don't remove the analog part. So that analog part, that's your dry signal. As you add the effect in, now you're taking that signal that's been copied and then converted to digital. And then you manipulate it and do fun stuff with it and convert that back to analog. And then you add the two together.
Right.
So basically that gives you like a wet control in essence. So, and I'm not saying one is better than the other, because kind of like what Brian Nuniber alludes to, when done right, it's totally as good as analog. But it's going to be hard to do that in a pedal that costs $60, $70, $80. And it's not because, it's really strictly because the parts that you need to really do that are expensive. And we've talked about margins before and how pedals are priced and all that stuff. By the time you start adding in margins for retailers and distributors and the cost of manufacturing and all that stuff, they're just, you simply can't do it that cheap. Not something's got to give somewhere, you know. It's like, if you have a new iMac, you're not going to be able to build that iMac for $100. You just can't. Right. You just can't. It's impossible.
The parts cost is just too high.
Right.
It just is.
Right.
I had a really good point and I've kind of forgotten it. So I guess I won't say anything.
I totally messed you up then.
Oh, what was it? I know what I was going to say. Like, okay, so I know this is a stretch, right? This is a big stretch to say these things. But like, when somebody listens to a demo, say, and they're like, "Man, I don't like that. It sounds digital." Because we were talking about conversion and stuff.
Yeah.
Think of how many times that signal has been converted from analog to digital before it actually reaches the ears of that person who's then like, "That doesn't sound very good."
Right.
Like, it gets converted in the pedal. It gets converted going into the DAW. It gets converted coming, it gets compressed and going to YouTube or wherever it's going.
Right.
And then it gets converted again to the analog signal that goes to the speakers that they're then using to listen. It's like, there's so many layers.
Which is what cracks me up about gear demos. And, you know, no respect to anyone doing gear demos. It's just how we do things in this day and age, right?
But it's a great thing. It's a great thing.
Yeah. It's so hard to really get the feel of a sound, or to get the feel of a sound, to get an accurate sound. And of course, you can't get any of the feel, like actually playing it. And to be honest with you, to me, it's kind of disheartening a bit whenever I see people put too much stock into a gear demo on YouTube, just because, I mean, let's say you recorded in the absolute best studio using the absolute best equipment. Once you stick it on YouTube, they're going to compress it and do things to the sound that you don't have any control over. I know mm-hmm. that's something we struggle with a lot is we'll upload something. I'm like, yeah, that sounds great. And then I listen to it on YouTube. I'm like, what happened?
Right.
What did you do, YouTube? And there's been times where I have, because we don't make them live immediately when we upload them. So I'll upload them and listen to it. I'm like, I don't know what's going on with that sound, but something is funky. And so, you know, I'll go back, listen to the regular file. I'm like, what the crap? What is going on? So, you know, I may export that audio again, and maybe it's some sort of weird uploading algorithm. I'm not exactly sure how that works. Sometimes it changes things. Sometimes it doesn't. But I do know it's something we all fight. In fact, I was talking to Mick from That Pedal Show this week, last week. And I forget what video it was on. Shoot. But what video was that on? It was the one where they did the reflection. They just talked about our new reflection that's coming out next week. And I was telling Mick, I'm like, man, I don't know what you did, but like your guitar sound over this whole video is fantastic. Like, what did you do? And you know, he gave me some tips and hints that he did, which is it's not only like change the EQ or anything like that. It wasn't anything as much as he's like, I'm using a really really, really good preamp, and that makes a lot of difference with that mic. And I'm like, well,
I believe that,
you know. And it's an expensive deal, so I don't have that. Some of those, not to change the subject, but some of those mic preamps, we're talking like $3,000 or $4,000 easy.
Oh, easy. You know? I mean, we talk about how expensive guitar gear is. It's nothing. It's a drop in the bucket compared to you start getting into the studio world.
Oh, yeah, it's crazy. I mean, people talk about, you know, $200 pedals and how they're a ripoff. Man, start buying some studio gear, you know?
Yeah, it's like, this. If you just put studio in the word, it's like, here's a studio chair. And it's like, why is that chair $4,000? Oh, because it's a studio chair. It's like... I mean, like, I'm kind of joking, but kind of not. Like, you'll see desks.
Yeah, the desks are like $6,000.
Like, I'm like, and the reason is, A, it's really nice. B, it's very specific. So, like, there's not a huge market for it.
Right.
And it's not like you're going to have a bunch of repeat buyers of those desks either.
Right.
So,
you're not like, selling those in Office Depot. You know,
no. So you know they have maybe 100 customers,
right?
I don't know what the number is, but that's it's a supply and demand type of thing too.
Yeah.
But like it's just kind of funny. Yeah, I do. Guitar gear is expensive. Don't get me wrong, but studio gear is just a whole another ball game altogether.
Right. I mean, I know with me. If I can, and this is really based upon the people that buy our stuff and like our stuff. So if it were up to me, I would do a lot more things in DSP. Like, and I'll just throw one example out there, because touched on it a second ago. Creating an EQ pedal with DSP where everything is converted to digital and been back to analog. Doing that. There are so many awesome things. And I don't mean awesome like in the typical middle America, like, awesome, dude, that's awesome. Oh, I swear it's awesome. I mean, like, literally, you are in awe. I mean, like, it literally will leave you in awe of the things that you can do once you start manipulating, once you start coding. I mean, really, your limit is your brain. That's really your limit. Well, and processing power. So, I mean, you know, I can't make a pedal fly to the moon and back necessarily. That'd be more mechanical power too. But anyways, I'm getting way off topic. But I mean, there's so many things I would love to do. I mean, here's another fun fact for everyone. And hopefully I'm not giving away too much. Just because of some of the things we've been messing with, I have been doing heavy experimentation with distortion in the DSP field.
Mm-hmm. Tell me more.
I wish I could.
That's not good enough.
I would just say this. Creating distortion in a DSP environment is a million times different than doing it on a breadboard. Both of them are fun because of the things you can do differently. It's because it's because you're not limited by part count, or you're not limited by, oh, this filter, it just does, it just has this thing about it. You know what I mean? Like, for example, tubes. Tubes really kind of suck. I mean, if you want clear, pristine, accurately reproduced audio, tubes suck. You know, but the things that suck, that quote unquote suck about it, we actually like it as guitar players. We like how you overload it and it clips in a cool way, you know? And so it's literally like learning, it literally is learning a different language. So.
Oh, it is. I've seen it. And I'm like, I don't know that robot speak. Get that out of here. Get that out of here.
What is the deal with all those semicolons? I don't get it.
it's really cool. I mean, the things, like you said, the things that you can do in that realm are really impressive. And I remember talking the first time Keely was on my show way back, we talked about this a little bit. And, you know, he was very enthusiastic about digital dirt. Not really at the time, but he's like, oh, in the future, we're going to be, you know, not Keely specifically, but like guitar players in general, like we're going to be all about that. And well, now we're totally totally seeing it with the adoption of the Helix,
right?
And the Kemper stuff,
Kemper and Fractal. Yeah, I was going to say I think Fractal, Kemper, probably Atomic to a degree, definitely Line 6. They're kind of like blazing this trail path. You know what I mean? Of where I don't think everything is heading there in 10 years or 20 years or whatever, but I think it's going to be way more adopted, you know, in a few years' time than it is now.
I think so too. I do too. But that's not to say there isn't still going to be a huge space for the analog stuff. Because there's, I can't talk about it. Dang it.
It's not going away. Just like, you know, people still drive 69 Chevelles around or 69 Camaros. I forget what you have, but it's either a Camaro or a Chevelle.
It's a Camaro. Yeah.
Camaro. Yeah. Like, you know what I mean? Like, people
but
still
dig that.
But it's
not my daily
stuff.
Driver.
It's not your daily driver, but I bet you still have a heck of a lot of fun driving it when you do.
Exactly. I think that that's what we'll see in, like you say, in that probably 10, 15, maybe 20 year mark. I think we'll see your average Joe, gear nerd even maybe, rocking around with a DSP-based rig. But like, man, when he gets in the studio, it's going to be the old Marshall.
Right.
You know? I can totally see that happening, especially for gigging, you know, touring musicians. Like, man, how much easier would that be? And then your backup rig is just another one of those things.
Like, you got to keep in mind, there's a lot of people who live in, let's say, New York City, for example.
Oh, perfect example.
You know, if you're a gigging guitar player in New York City, it's not very easy to drag a combo amp and a couple guitars and a pedal board, you know what I mean? Like all this gear in the back of a taxi. It's just it's just not practical. You know, so on the subway.
That's where most of them are riding.
Or on the subway, exactly. Yeah. Or on your bike, you know, because you're not generally driving around New York City, for those who aren't familiar with it. You're not generally driving around New York City in a car, you know, back and forth like you would here in Indiana, you know?
No, it's not an efficient way to travel. It's,
right.
You only drive in a car if you have to.
Right. Literally, you get there faster by walking most of the time. So, I mean, you know, for that guitar player, it is so handy to have something like the Helix or whatever that you can, you know, it's in your bag and you got your guitar, maybe you have some cables in there, and that's your whole setup. You know, so now we have to kind of hone that in and make that sound as good as humanly possible. You know, make that sound as accurate and touch sensitive and realistic. I see the big thing that people are not fighting against, but, and we've touched on this before, when you have a digital setup like that, generally what you get is a mic'd sound of an amp, and people tend to kind of miss the sound of the amp in the room. You know what I mean?
So that's what I just seen. I'm glad you brought that up. I just seen, did you see those powered speakers that Line 6 just dropped?
I haven't seen those, but I know Friedman makes a powered speaker for that reason.
It's probably the like a very similar type of deal. It looked like, I didn't do too much reading into it, but it looked like it was just a powered monitor, maybe tuned a certain way. I'm guessing. I could be wrong about that. There's probably a bunch of stuff going on that I don't know. But it was like kind of designed to work with the Helix to really get kind of the quote unquote normal feel back. Is the way I understood its purpose. But what confused me, I should have done more research before I started talking about it, but what confused me is it seemed like, isn't that the whole point of the Helix is to avoid having to bring a powered speaker with you?
It does kind of defeat the purpose. I mean, I guess it can. Yeah, you know what I mean? I mean, man, there's different ways to go about it. I mean, let's say you're playing in church. It would be handy just to have a powered speaker that just sit there all the time, you know.
Aren't most venues and things gonna have something like that already? I don't know. I'm not a gigger, so I'm just kind of talking out loud here. I don't know.
I totally see your point, and I think it's a weird market that like we're trying to figure this out. I mean, I don't know. I don't know if you recall this, but I think it was Atomic that used to make these cabinets that, you remember the old Line 6 little bean shaped pods?
Oh yeah, definitely.
So they'd make this cabinet, full range cabinet, that you just put the Line 6 pod. I think, what was it called, a pod?
I think, yeah, the pod. They had the pod and the pod 2, I think.
Right, and so you just connect it into this little full range cabinet. This is back in like 2004 or 5 or something. And that was, you know, that was supposed to give you your amp. That was your amp in the room, mm-hmm. You know? But again, that's still giving you the sound of a mic'd amp. Not that that's bad, but whenever you have a guitar amp that's in the room and there's no mic on it, one of the hardest things that definitely for me and many other people I know that I've talked to about this, the hardest thing to do is to make that amplifier sound through your monitors like it does when that amp is in the room.
Right.
It's just your ears respond differently to sound. We've talked about this before. Your ears respond differently to sound. And it's not – and the mic colors things. Every mic colors things. Every mic preamp colors things. Like all those things – all the things connected – it all affects the sound, and it's so hard to get that sound of the amp in the room.
Mm-hmm. Well, and then, you know, the whole point of the powered speaker, I think, in trying to replicate that is because the air hitting, how many times have we talked about this? Like 4 million. The air hitting you has an effect on how it sounds to you as well and how it feels.
Yep. Yep. Because you're actually hearing, believe it or not, with parts of your body. Mm-hmm. So I'm sure most everyone hasn't listened to all these episodes. So there are a few. I know there are a few, but for the most part, y'all got better things to do with your lives than listen to me and Blake talk.
I doubt it. What could be more possibly more valuable than this?
Eating Cheetos?
You're right. I stand corrected. Okay. Good point, Brian.
Barbecuing?
Oh.
Drinking a good beer?
Yeah. You could do all of those things and listen to us ramble nonsense on the internet.
Wait, are you saying that I can go grab my bag of Cheetos and eat them into this microphone whilst we talk?
No, you can't, but they could. They could definitely do that, and it would probably enhance their experience. Go get yourself a bag of jalapeno Cheetos right now if you have some handy, and just give them a good crunch.
We'll wait for you.
Yeah, we'll be here when you get back. We'll still be talking. Don't you worry. We don't have any problems in that department.
All right, and I guess you're back now, right? You've got your bag of Cheetos. You're sitting down. You've got your ice cold beer, or if you're a non beer drinker, you have your coffee, right? And it's a good Guatemalan bean. Speaking of, not to change the subject, but I have to give mad props. I'm going to change the subject anyways for a second.
Okay.
I had to give mad props to my man, James B. O'Rear. Now, I know you don't know who James B. O'Rear is, so I'm going to look up his, not email address, but his, oh, shoot. YouTube channel.
YouTube. Oh, okay.
Because, oh, come on. Okay, so I can't do it while I'm on the podcast because it requires me doing two things at once. But look up James B. O'Rear. He has a coffee channel on YouTube. Anyways, if he plays guitar, that's how I know him. But I've got mad respect for the guy because he knows I am in love with a good Guatemalan bean.
Okay.
You know, see, my daughter is, I adopted my daughter when she was a baby from Guatemala, from Antigua, mm-hmm. or from Guatemala City. And when I went there, I had literally the best cup of coffee I ever had in my entire life. The best cup of coffee. And so ever since then, I've been just trying different beans. So he keeps sending me like all these different types of roasts and from all these different roasters. And so anyways, gigantic, huge thank yous to James B. O'Rear. Please check him out on YouTube and watch his videos. Give him some love.
Here I am sitting here sipping on my cup of Kirkland Signature drip coffee, feeling inferior.
Could be worse. Could be like McDonald's coffee. Remember that time we did a podcast and I had to resort to McDonald's coffee?
I do. And you were it was like you were on crack. It's like, did they put something in your McDonald's coffee?
I don't have much. All right. I take that back. It's not James B. O'Rear. I don't know how I got that. It's James O'Rear. So James O apostrophe rear, like, you know, R-E-A-R. And his channel is called Let's Get Coffee with James.
I Googled this James B. O'Rear character and all I could find was videos of a camel.
Don't click through the Google images on that one. So anyways, this podcast obviously sponsored by Let's Get Coffee with James, and Nunavir Technology.
Of course.
Not really.
But I didn't really address what I think about digital stuff, I guess.
We'll do it.
It's basically the same. I feel the same way you do. I think we're going to get to a point where people will realize that it doesn't matter. If it sounds good, it is good. And it doesn't really matter if it's analog or digital. And I say all that, shout out to Jamie Davis, if you're listening to this right now. We have a little internet battle of sorts where he constantly suggests the Line 6 Helix for everything, and I say it's a piece of junk, even though I don't actually think that it is. It's just an inside joke. But I really do think that like we're on the cusp of some legit stuff, and I've said this before. In a recorded format, I think things are so good now. With certain tools, I could listen to a recording and not know if one's modeled and or if one's the real thing.
Totally agree with that. Yep.
I would not be able to tell. If they were both done really well, I don't think I could tell the difference. So
yeah, I mean, we talked about the impulse response technology a lot here lately. Mm-hmm. And that's just one small part of this DSP picture. You know, I mean, let me think of a way to put this in easy to understand non-nerdy terms. So think of impulse response like a super awesome fancy EQ curve but it does more. It has more life to it because it's capturing other stuff around the sound. So, mm-hmm. and it's over a period of time. So as stuff like the cabinets moving, there's stuff in the room, not like papers and stuff, but I mean like the speaker's moving and it's making noise throughout the air, like all this stuff physically that's happening is captured in this digital snapshot.
Well, I wonder if people know, I mean, I've actually caught some impulse responses before for some other projects. I did it the most rudimentary way you could possibly do it, but it's really as simple as At least when you're getting room sounds, getting cab sounds is a whole kind of another ballgame. But just to get the sound of a room for like a reverb or something, mm-hmm. you're really setting a mic up in the space that you want to capture, or a couple mics or whatever, and you make a loud, abrupt sound. We popped a balloon and caught it several different times. And basically you send that to the people who are smart and they analyze it and they create a room sound out of it.
Yes.
That's the really dumb person's way of explaining it, because that's who I am. But that's what we did. we literally just captured a balloon popping in a certain space so we could try to emulate that space as closely as possible.
And how accurately did it come out? Because that's a pretty unique way of capturing an IR. Not that it's bad, but that is unique.
I don't know yet.
Oh, you don't have the file back.
Yeah, we'll find out. It was a really weird space, and it had really crazy comb filtering effects and all kinds of things going on. So I'll be very curious to see what that comes out to, if it ever does. I think it will, but wait for me to be all cryptic and stuff.
Woo! Yeah, exactly. All right, so do you have anything else to tie it? Is that all you got for the DSP argument here?
I like DSP. I like analog. Whatever tool gets the job done in the best and most awesome way is the one that I'm going to use most likely.
And I would say to kind of finalize this part of the podcast, try to keep an open mind. Mm-hmm. Because in the past, you're right. There's a lot of stuff that was created digitally that just sucked over the years, you know. But it's because the internet kind of sucked too. Computers sucked. Like, we didn't have iPhones. I mean, the technology was not there like it is now, or at least it wasn't there inexpensively like it is now.
Well, just the perfect example is that the little device that everyone carries around in their pocket is substantially more powerful than the room of computers that was used to send man to the moon.
Yes.
So if you believe in that sort of thing, I mean, but seriously, like those computers weren't that good. I remember the old green screen computers and stuff, and they weren't good.
No, no.
My phone is substantially more powerful and a better tool than those. And I think, we're just going to continue to see the progression of that.
Right.
In guitar pedals and effects and amps and recording and everything. Oh, man, in recording, plugins are just amazing. The plugins you can get.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah, and imagine, so what we're trying to do is bring that sort of thing into the pedal world.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because you can do a heck of a lot more with it.
Yep. You know,
so, okay, so to wrap this podcast up, I'm actually going to, if I can get permission from the guys from, what's the podcast? Six String Under.
Okay.
They did a bit with me and Paul Reed Smith. And it's a bit, so it's not like us actually recorded, it's characters, right? And the bit's supposed to be Paul Reed Smith and I drunk at NAMM. And so,
okay. So
it has Paul Reed Smith, like, totally talking about how he's going to buy Fender guitars and Gibson guitars and put them in all the bathrooms for people to wipe their butts on, it's like me and Paul having this conversation, you know, this in this bit, mm-hmm. And I'm going, Jiminy Crickets, Mr. Smith. Jiminy Crickets.
Oh, no. Oh,
and
no.
So I wrote back, I'm like, that is funny, but I'm like, Jiminy Crickets? For real?
Yeah. Oh, that's awesome. Jiminy Crickets. Jiminy Crickets, that's great. I haven't heard that. I totally got to listen to that. That's awesome.
They just sent it to me a few days ago, so it may not be out yet, but it will be shortly. SixStringUnder.com, I believe. And if, like I said, if I can get permission, I'll put that little bit here at the tail end of this podcast. And if not, then there won't be anything here.
And here it is. The 2018 Meteora. Thank you for visiting the Fender booth.
Hey, Fender! Hey, where'd you get your ideas for that one? 1950? Ah! get it.
Mr. Paul Reed Smith.
Woo!
That's me.
If you don't go back to your own booth, I'm calling security.
La-di-da! We dug up Leo last night. Dressed him up in a cocktail dress and let him go dancing with sailors. Up yours. Hey, it's Brian Wampler over here, man. Come here.
Jiminy crickets, Paul. Pull your pants up.
Uh-oh. It's opposite day.
Golly, pull yourself together.
Hey, Beezer buddy boy, man. Don't worry. It's not what it looks like. I came over here to see if they'd let me borrow one of those Stratocasters. Because they ran out of toilet paper in the bathroom. High five, anybody?
Good one, Paul.
I love it.
Jiminy Crickets, Paul, pull yourself together. Ask yourself, Paul, what would Jesus do?
Jesus? Jesus? Jesus would never
step foot in the state of California.
Okay, that's it. This. I am out of here.
Mr. Wampler, if you don't remove your friend from the fender booth, I'll be forced to call the authorities.
Okay, sorry. Wait. Time out. You're misunderstanding, all right? You're totally misunderstanding me, man, all right? First thing I'm going to do is I'm going to buy Gibson. And then I'm going to turn every single one of those sorry excuses for guitars into toilet paper. And next year, every single person that comes to NAMM is going to wipe their butt with a Gibson. And then I'm going to come back and I'm going to buy you and I'm going to... Oh, it feels like
something just got me in the guts.
Hello, darkness, my old friend. I've come to talk with you again.
Are you all good?
Because a vision softly creeping.
Ha! All right, well, on that note, Jiminy Crickets, Mr. Wampler. I'll see you next week.
See you later. And thanks so much for listening to the Chasing Tone podcast. I really appreciate it. If you have any comments or questions, you can email podcast@womplerpedals.com. If you are more of the video type and you like videos, make sure you check out our YouTube channel. Simply type in Wampler YouTube or Wampler Pedals YouTube. You'll find it. And again, thanks for listening. Have a great week. We'll talk to you next Monday.